Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast. The journey of a founder is unlike any other. The chips are seemingly stacked against you as an entrepreneur, but the burning desire to revolutionize the world and leave a lasting impact is stronger now than ever with many founders. Our podcast looks to inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs to pursue their next great idea, educate them on how to make this impossibility a reality, and create a supportive group of entrepreneurs who are there for their fellow founders. Our podcast features only the highest performing entrepreneurs who have bootstrapped, raised funds, built companies, sold companies, and have experienced life-altering challenges and some significant triumphs. Join us on this journey with the Founders Odyssey podcast and listen in on this upcoming episode. Welcome to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we create an environment for founders to thrive through education, inspiration, and a supportive community. My name is Nathan Bird, and I will be your host today. With his analytical mind, relational approach, and outgoing personality, our special guest today, Christopher Barkas, a driven and focused entrepreneur, is the chief revenue officer and co-founder of an innovative technology startup called Tactic, which focuses on solving the complexities companies are having evolving into a hybrid work environment. Through their informative dashboard and metrics-based software, they are solving significant problems. Christopher and his team have just come off a funding round of $3 million from Peterson Ventures and are poised for exponential growth. Join us today as we learn more about Christopher. Welcome, Christopher, to the show.
Hey, thanks, Nathan. Super excited to be here and be on the podcast.
Awesome. You know, we joked a little bit about how startups can be stressful and about how they can take a little bit of life out of you. But you know, what's interesting if you know you take the life out of you, but then you're putting it into the product, which is an exciting thing. And that's what I think every founder gets excited about. But there's always a balance that comes in that mix, which is, you know, what I feel that you're doing now. So what we've got here is, let's dive right into it. What got you interested in really just technology, but also within business as well? Because I see you're an entrepreneur.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, I think, my family will joke about this all the time, right? But I was the kid who, not necessarily in a bad way, but like I'd always look for shortcuts, you know, growing up, I think. And I would always use different type of technologies to solve my problems. Like my dad, you know, gave me different chores growing up or whatever. I'm like, hey, how can I like automate my lawnmower, you know, to automatically go? And like, I would just think of all these different things just like my whole life. Cause I was like, oh, this takes me 2 hours. I'd rather spend 2 hours, you know, playing video games or doing whatever, or riding my bike, you know? And so I'd always look for ways to, you know, I think just, you know, growing up, that was like always the case. And actually the time that I got really involved in technology was around the age of like 15, 16, when the Apple iPhone came out. I don't know what it was, but I just became like super like fascinated with it. I absolutely loved it and ended up doing, back at the time, I don't know if you remember, but iPhones, you know, only AT&T could use them. Yep. I learned all about software and how to like, at the time it was called jailbreaking an iPhone, and I would open it up so it could work with any carrier. Well, it actually became an awesome business. And so I would be able to buy iPhones, you know, for a couple hundred bucks on, you know, Craigslist at the time. I learned how to like jailbreak them, hack them essentially, and then open up to any carrier, and I could sell them like 10x the amount, because a Verizon user or a T-Mobile user would want an iPhone at the time. You know, if you didn't have AT&T, you couldn't do it. So anyway, long story short, like always been fascinated in technology, always been fascinated in finding ways to make things more efficient and faster and quicker. And obviously, you know, doing that through technology was the easiest way. So
you said a few things here, and yeah. I'd love to also address those to all the founders that are listening to see systems and identify specific angles, right? And also use that excitement to go dig deeper and learn more. And it sounds like that's what you did when you were fascinated with a specific product, but also you're looking for ways and systems that you could advance things forward. Do you feel 100%. That is the same Christopher today and you have just kind of implemented that into various business opportunities?
Yeah, 100%. I think I'm a little bit more of a realist now in the sense of, you know, like, you know, I think I know a lot more, you know, at the time, like there's, you know, they're sitting lawnmowers, right? You know, not like I have the standing one and trying to like automate it, you know, like stupid things. But I think nowadays, you know, a little bit more realist in the sense of what you're capable of automating. But yeah, you know, still stands true for sure.
So do you have any mentors right now or advisors or people that you were inspired by in the past that have put you in the position that you are today? And if so, who are those people and what type of traits do you look for in a good mentor?
Yeah, I mean, I got really lucky. I worked at a specific startup called Peak Travel for about 4 years. They had an incredible amount of awesome, amazing leaders, you know, from top down. And I think from each and every one of them, you know, in some aspects, I mean, it was a very fast pace moving. I mean, when we started, it was, you know, somewhere from like 30 employees to by the time I left, you know, over 150. And so during that time span, right, you had all sorts of leaders, right, that came in and out. I mean, one of them was like Davis Bell at Canopy, you know, it's our GM for, you know, a year. And so we got to work with a whole variety of different, you know, leaders, and all of those leaders have now become bigger leaders. You know, like I said, you know, Davis Bell's now CEO. Like there's people that we were able to network with and come in and learn from. And I think being in such a super fast paced environment and having a bunch of like amazing leaders really helped shape who I am and how I see things and how I can, you know, kind of manage and run business now. And I think, you know, to each and all of them, you know, like I said, there was handfuls, was able to learn a variety of different things, you know, and at different points of the business, right? Like I said, doing something with 30 people is a whole lot different than doing things with 150 people. And I think that was the biggest learning was, you know, how things change based off, you know, the size and where you are in terms of, you know, production and you know, from the company.
So as a leader in your field right now, what were some of the biggest leadership attributes that you were looking for in advisors and leaders that you now have implemented into your own organization?
Yeah, the number one thing I learned, and I think it's carried with me, and it was more of a humbling experience for sure. But I think being able to not just adapt, but adapt to and realize that everyone's different, right? Like you and I don't think the same way. And actually, that's a great thing. I think it allows for innovation. And I think, you know, early on in my career, there was a lot of times where I thought I knew everything. I thought I knew the best way and it was my way. And I was successful. Don't get me wrong. I was successful. And that's why, you know, I would do well at what I was doing. But the problem was, and what I, you know, realized is as things change, you need to adapt. You need to innovate. And to do that, you need people and you need people that can think differently. Because the way that you think is great and could be a great way, but ultimately you need other people, you need other, you know, thought processes. And I think one thing that, you know, one specific leader told me, and he sat me down and he was like, everyone learns differently. Everyone is different. And just because it's not your way doesn't mean it's not the right way. And especially for that person, and what might work for some person, you know, one person might not work for you. And that was a defining moment for me. And again, this was, you know, years ago, but I was able to carry that. And now when I work with people, I realize like, hey, what motivates you doesn't motivate me. And that's actually perfectly fine. And in fact, that's probably a better thing. And now, you know, you can work together and you can be a lot more innovative because you have people that think differently. And so truthfully, one thing that I've tried to find is people that think differently than me. You know, and when I find those people, I want those people because I know they're going to be able to bring a different view. They're going to ultimately bring more value than someone that's thinking the same way as me. So
that's really insightful. And I appreciate you sharing that. I know in circumstances, we, as founders, we are in a position where we don't quite understand, or we are frustrated, like you're saying, with other people's opinions or ideas. And what I have found too is simply to seek to understand, slow down a little bit and understand the perspective that other person is coming from. And it's really just goes right along with what you're saying. So In a way, I'm just agreeing with you and just enjoying this conversation. So education, let's move on to education and how that's played a major role. And then as an entrepreneur, we are lifelong learners. So what's one thing that you're really learning right now in the present that you can share with our audience?
I'll say this. If you're not learning, you're if you ever feel stagnant, then you should change what you're doing. I think it's funny, when you're a kid, right, you grow up and you think, oh, when I'm older, I'm going to know a lot more things, you know, like, and don't get me wrong, you do, but the truth is, and the fact is that you should be learning just as much as you were when you were 12, as you are today, no matter what age, you know. And I think, and the way, and I think with technology nowadays, there's so many more ways to learn, right? You have YouTube, you have things, you have so many more resources and videos, and you can do so much more. And I think for me, that's the biggest thing is we should be constantly learning. We should be constantly stretching ourselves, trying to find ways to go out of our comfort zone. And if you don't feel like you're doing that, then in my opinion, you're creating a, you're not in the right environment ultimately, right? I think everyone should be learning constantly and doing that. And now with all the resources that we have in the internet and everything like that, there's no reason why we can't be, you know, getting better and learning more every day.
Tell us what you're currently learning right now and what you're excited about.
Well, learning more than I ever have at the current moment. My background's primarily sales, right? So I got in, obviously, like, you know, I'm passionate about technology, but I never learned like how to code necessarily. You know, baseline things like I talked about, but never anything, you know, serious. And, you know, sales and being in, you know, that environment just resonated with me. And that's kind of where I, you know, went with my career. That said, I'm currently in the position where I'm wearing, and I've worn different hats at a startup, but not at this scale. You know, I'm currently learning about every department and how to not only manage the department, but how to do the jobs. And I think, you know, currently that's the biggest challenge is saying, okay, what are the KPIs? What are the things that we need to be doing in order to be successful in this area of business that I'm unfamiliar with, that I have no idea how it runs or how it should work. I have a, you know, shot in the dark idea as anyone else, but ultimately to be responsible for it and force myself to not only learn it, but become an expert at it. That is, you know, what's been, you know, the most challenging thing currently, because I can go do what I'm doing, what I'm really good at, and keep doing that. But that's not the position that we're in as a company. I have to be doing 800 things at one time, and I have to be an expert at every single, you know, one of those. I'm not by any means, nor am I close, but I have to learn how to be in order to make it successful. I can't help someone at their job if I don't know, you know, what they need to be doing, right?
I feel like the audience could really take and be inspired off of that, because what you're doing is you're taking ownership in your business. And to take ownership means to do things that sometimes you don't think or are good at. And what you've done here is really focused in on those areas and are hungry to learn, which is really good. And then secondly, with your previous statement, you said, change your state. And there's a lot of different ways you can do that, you know, physiologically, geographically, change your state in order for you to make a exponential leap and bound. And, you know, and I think what you're doing is wonderful, you know, to accomplish those specific tasks. So I would ask you, you know, considering that you're learning a lot right now, what's one thing that you would tell your younger self to really focus on, you know, to get to where you want to go?
Yeah, there's some practical things, right? Like I would tell myself, like, learn how to code, you know, just like, and I would also tell myself, you know, learn how to, you know, get really good at Excel, get really good at finance. You know, there's three areas that I think that, like, ultimately everyone should, if you were really good at finance, sales and that whole thing, you know, customer relationships and engineering, coding, like you would be like a unicorn type of person, right? And I think those are things you could learn as a kid, and you could use them in today's day and age, right? You know, as far as intangibles though, or intangibles, like ultimately, like I would have told myself to work, and I consider myself a hard worker, but I would have told myself to really work harder when I was younger. You know, I think there's something about a work ethic and just muscling your way through something. And again, yeah, we can learn it. We can become experts. We can try and study things, you know, day in, day night. And, but ultimately, if you can just push through when times are tough and you just understand grit, I think ultimately, you know, nothing will stop you. And I think sometimes, you know, when you're up late at night and you have to wake up really early, you get an hour of sleep and you got to just push through the day. There's just something about that, that like, I think is just so valuable, you know, versus, you know, just knowing how to do something, let alone pushing through when things are tough. Like ultimately is really what puts someone in a better position.
It's very valuable. You know, you've said determination, and determination can typically, you know, it's always fueled by your why. So having a deeper and deeply rooted why will in essence help you to propel forward. And I'm sure you have a lot of whys in your life right now. And, you know, let's hop into what the current circumstances looking like for you in your business, which I'm very excited for you, obviously having your, this recent funding round, which can really help to set a solid foundation for a company and you can start to look to scale. So share with me a little bit about your scaling and where the company's at and where you guys are focused in it.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this, way harder than you think it's going to be. you know, I think when you go to raise money, you think, oh, money's going to solve all my problems. It's just a natural tendency. That's why people raise money, right? I can tell you that's not the case. It doesn't really help in any way. It all it does is enable you to have the capability of doing something, but it doesn't make it any easier, right? And I think that's a, you know, and ultimately, right, like I think that's just like, you know, it's the reality, you know, and I think it's important to understand that when raising money is, you know, it's not going to make the job any easier. It's in fact, it's going to make it tougher. But it's, you know, it does give you the resources to be able to do it, right, and to accomplish what you want. But you know, in terms of the business, right, like we launched officially a year ago. So like that's when we went to market. We had a product, we had an MVP, we took it to market, got some sales really, really early on. Obviously at the time, like COVID, what was going on in the market, like people weren't necessarily going back in the office, but they were thinking about it, right? Obviously we had various variants along the way of COVID that's kind of pushed back a lot of that. But ultimately, you know, we got enough traction obviously to attract investors, to make people really interested in what we're doing. We're disrupting a very archaic legacy style, you know, industry, right? All, you know, there's pre-existing solutions in our space, but they were all built for prior needs, right? You know, everyone was in office every single day. No one worked remote. It's, you know, very rare. It was like less than 10% statistically. And so now you have this shift where 80% of people, and for a time being for 2 years, 100% of people are basically working remote. And now you have this new future that we made a big bet on, which is hybrid. We believe that, you know, we're adults, we should be treated like adults, but ultimately there's still a place. I'm in an office right now. I love being in the office, but I don't like being there every single day, right? I'm going to be leaving here in an hour and I'm going to go work the rest of the day at home. And that's how it should be. But ultimately we think the working together in person with people is still very, very valuable. And so doubling down on that, you know, we, you know, created a platform that's obviously designed to manage that and make it easy for companies. But now we're in a position where, you know, COVID is hopefully becoming a thing of the past, right? Very soon here. And yes, you know, we still want to be, you know, we have some things in place to help mitigate and manage, you know, capacity and health and safety for employees and employers. But really long term, and where we're at now is the time for us to really be in the market. And I think we're now seeing opportunities, you know, greater than we ever have before, you know, with companies that we're in talks with. And I think now is the time for us to scale, to put the pedal to the metal and move, because now is, you know, there's never going to be a bigger demand for what we're doing than right now as people are trying to figure it out.
Yeah. And that's exciting, man. I know that, you know, more money, like you said, doesn't always solve your problems. And at the foundation of any company, it's so important to have your not just friendships, but your working relationships really tied down to a solid foundation. Could you explain to me a little bit about how you guys have developed a good working relationship amongst your co-founders?
Yeah, 100%. So the good news about us, each of us, we all bring a different skill set to the table. And again, part of that mentorship that we talked about early on, when I got that, you know, great feedback from you know, one of my managers a long time ago, that basically said, you got to find people that think differently. Well, we've done that. We found a super technical minded person. We found a super, you know, financial, you know, minded person. And then we found myself, who is, you know, very salesy, you know, relationship based. And so we make this perfect trio. Now, don't get me wrong, that's created plenty of, you know, very hard arguments and, different ideas of directions at different times. But the best thing about our relationship, about the three of us, hands down, at the end of the day, we respect everyone and every opinion. I mean, we take it all to the table, no matter what. And I think ultimately the other cool thing is having three of us, it makes it very easy to vote. Ultimately, we've always had where two people align. And the best part about it is we've all equally probably had the amount of times that we've been the odd man out. And let me tell you, the coolest part about this is 9 times out of 10, whatever the decision that we did, that we had to vote on to, you know, split the votes or whatever, it has led to the right decision. I can promise you that. It's been crazy, which is just doubles down on the fact that we made the right decision by all coming together, which is really, really cool. But yeah, there's been some major decisions that we've made, and straight up, we've had, you know, one out of three, I don't know, there's plenty of times all three of us agree, you know, obviously, but the times that we don't, the outcome's been phenomenal. And sometimes I'm like, man, I'm so lucky I have these two, because if we went with my decision, we would not have been in this awesome spot or this doing this awesome opportunity. So again, the great thing about us all come from, you know, various backgrounds, all come with tons of different experience in terms of, you know, our departments. But when we come together, I mean, we're a strong, strong, strong team, which is awesome.
I'd like to reiterate what you said there in regards to respect. And as men and women, we, you know, we're still wanting respect. And through that, there's also trust that is developed and occurs throughout, you know, throughout your founder partnerships. And you touched on that, and I feel it's just, you're right on. So I'm excited for your growth, like I said. And let's talk a little bit about resource allocation and where you're looking to focus in for tactic. Now we're specifically speaking in regards to the company. Then we'll touch on a little bit of the future and what you're excited about. And then, we'll go from there.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. So in our current environment, right? So we have about 20 total employees, various contractors, W-2. I think we have like 14 W-2 currently. Six contractors. So we're good sized. I think we're bigger than we thought we'd be at this point. Truthfully, I think we, you know, identified some needs in certain departments that we didn't realize we were going to need so quickly, and we had to fill those. But the way we started, which I think was really smart, is we invested heavily in the product and the engineering team. I mean, those were, you know, our first two full-time hires. And then I think even the third full-time hire was an engineer along with our technical co-founder. So we really invested heavily early on in the product and being a product-focused company. I think that was a really smart move. I think, once we started to see some traction and getting some groundwork, you know, that's where the shift has now or started to become, you know, okay, well, now we need to focus on, you know, obtaining clients, right? We've invested all this money in the product. Now we got to sell it. And so we invested there. And I think early on is when we realized, okay, this isn't going to be as easy as just like building an awesome product and selling it. This is going to be maintaining relationships, right? And so from there, it was, you know, how are we going to manage these relationships, finding a success team and making that possible, an implementation team. And so early on, I think we didn't realize the amount of lift and work to, because we were very customer centric. We're very, very focused on the customer. We believe that what the customer tells us is ultimately the direction that we should go. And we shouldn't, you know, make any decisions outside of the decisions that the customers want, right? We're not trying to build some certain thing. We want what the market wants and what our customers need. Yeah, sure, we had a cool idea brought to the table, but at this point, you know, the customers are going to lead and guide us, you know, here on out. And I think which is awesome because we get amazing feedback. I talked to other founders, I talked to other, you know, companies who are like, it's like pulling teeth to get feedback from customers. We have customers that build spreadsheets, will like want to join our product roadmap calls. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's a lot, but we've created this really cool culture with our customers where it's like, oh, they know that we care about them. And they know that, you know, we're passionate about building a product that is going to find value for them. And so we're currently in this phase where, you know, we now need to grow, right? It's fun and games to build a cool product and have a company and a logo and a website and feel cool, you know, and you know, have your LinkedIn, you know, you're a founder of a company, awesome. But now it's the real, we need to grow the company. And so we're trying to shift to, you know, becoming a, you know, revenue focused, you know, go-to-market, you know, aggressive go-to-market team. And so that's our biggest focus right now.
Sounds like a shift here to marketing and sales based off the company's awesome product that was, that you guys had focused in on. And would that be something that you would suggest to an early stage founder that maybe had been a little bit behind where you guys are at now? How would you look at it a little bit differently now?
If I were to go back, we would have been a lot more aggressive on the sales side than we were initially, right? Not saying we weren't aggressive. I mean, we built the product based off feedback from people. I mean, we took wireframes, you know, to customers. Like, is this realistic? Is this something you would use? I mean, we didn't just build a product, right? I mean, we did a lot of that. But I think where we could have been more aggressive is as we were hiring those engineers, we should have been simultaneously hiring, you know, more salespeople, you know, and getting a marketing team off the ground earlier than we did. Not saying it's a bad thing, you know, what we've done, and we're in a great spot. It's just more of like, where could we have been if we would have started, you know, even earlier? And I think you've got to find the right balance, right? You can't be too sales heavy where you're selling fluff and upsetting customers, but you also don't want to, you know, have an awesome product that no one's using either. So
that's where clever marketing comes in and creating a following and a culture. And you can create all of that without actually having a product, which is very interesting. Yep. As you can do your pre-marketing campaign to create momentum and synergies amongst what you have and what you will solve. But you know, like looking hindsight, what they say.
Yeah. Okay. Everything's, yeah. And, so hindsight's 2020.
Yeah, exactly. So where you at is it's a wonderful blessing, and you guys are just going to continue to build from there. But for those that are listening, you know, take some heed to what he's saying. Make sure that you have a fine balance between sales and marketing, as well as the product development and building that according to your customers' needs through your engagement and your questionnaires and surveys and things like that. So future, man, let's talk a little bit about future, what you're excited about.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, here's what we're most excited about, right? I mean, obviously at a very high level, it's that the future of work is going to be hybrid. I mean, you can go just look on Google, go on LinkedIn, go on any, you know, anything. Everyone, the talk is we want some sort of mix, right? Employees, yes, want ultimate freedom in terms of where and when they work, but one of the offices is clearly one of those places is clearly the office, right? Like the office is not dead. You know, back in 2020, March of 2020, you know, we saw headlines that said the office is dead. That is not the case. The office is different, and the role of the office is entirely different, but is by means not dead. Collaboration and the reason for going into the office is entirely different, which is awesome. You know, I saw a post recently by this guy who said, like, you know, it was like a snowstorm. It was like a month ago. I can't remember the day or who it was, but he was like, took a photo of him driving in traffic in a snowstorm. And he was like, I turned around, I got off the freeway and I went home because my employer allows me to work from home. And he was saying, you know, 3 years ago, I would have had to drive in this dangerous, scary, terrible snowstorm to get 30 minutes to the office. That's awesome. That's amazing. That's how we should be. And that's how we should have been for the last 20 years. The fact that we forced people to, and I was one of them. I used to have to drive in the office in a crazy snowstorm down I-15, which is already a joke, but you know, you throw a snowstorm on top, right? And so I think what I'm excited about the future is that I believe that we've nailed it in terms of what people want. I think employers and companies are buying it, and they're now finally saying, okay, fine, you know, but this makes sense, you know? And so that's amazing. In terms of, you know, the future of our product, I think we're, you know, we're, like I said, from, you know, a different point in this conversation, but the industry, the office management industry is very archaic. There's a lot of legacy softwares. And the one reason for that is because the needs were very different. Now you have a new need where employees, right? If I want to drive 30 minutes in a snowstorm because there's someone I really see that I really want to work with that's at the office, I might do that because I really want to meet with that person. I know they're in the office. And so there's this new element where knowing where other people are in your team is really important. That was not important 3 years ago because you just knew someone was at the office. You knew they were going to be there. That's no longer the case. The worst thing I can do is drive 30 minutes in a snowstorm and I'm the only one there. I do not want to do that, right? And so Taktik actually bridges that gap. You can log on, you can from your phone easily see who's in the office, who's actually checked in physically there, who plans to be there, and who's not there. I no longer have to worry about, you know, does it make sense to go into the office today or not? I know Taktik gives me those details. And then on the employer side, right? Like having that data is really, really important. The pitch is no longer having the four floor awesome building right up I-15. No one cares anymore. The rock wall, the basketball hoop, no one cares. You know what people care about is they care about flexibility. They care about knowing who's where, when. And I think that's what Taktik does. You know, and now, you know, if I'm, you know, have this four floor awesome office building, but only 100 people show up every day and I have enough space for 1,000, am I going to keep that building? Am I going to keep that lease? Am I going to keep spending millions of dollars a year to have, you know, a couple hundred people show up every single day? Probably not. But how are you going to know? And how are you going to be able to make an educated, you know, decision on what type of real estate footprint you should have for your company? Taktik gives you that answer. And so that's what we're really excited about is you're going to stop seeing, you know, companies own four floors. You're going to see them only own one floor and they're going to sublease the other three floors. And thank you to Taktik, they can manage all of that and know what makes sense for them. And so, you know, obviously people are stuck in leases still today from, you know, signing those 6-year, 8-year, you know, 3-year leases, but you're going to see a big shift in terms of, you know, much more collaborative spaces, a lot less space, you know, no more having, you know, 2,000 desks for, you know, 1,000 employees. You're not going to see that anymore. And it doesn't make sense to. So
take my money.
Perfect.
No, I had an advisor. He always told me, and he still does, is invest in the inevitable. And you guys are investing, right? As well as to building a product that will meet the future and currently is in the present. So I commend you guys for that. And, you know, I just want to take this time to let you know I appreciate you personally and the time that you've taken out here to just share a little bit of your wisdom to the Founders Odyssey podcast. And
thank you.
You know, have you had a good time?
Absolutely. Yeah, this has been a blast. I appreciate having me on and you know, nothing like, you know, hopefully spreading some information, hopefully not misinformation to other people that can, you know, hear the words and hopefully be inspired.
Absolutely. Well, once again, guys, thank you. My name is Nathan Bird, and thank you for listening to the Founders Odyssey podcast, where we educate, inspire, and create a supportive environment for you as a founder. And until next time, feel free to check out some of our other podcasts on Spotify, as well as thefoundersodyssey.com. And once again, Chris, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Nathan. Really appreciate having me on here.